On today's show, we're fortunate enough to have Azadeh Shahshahani join us. She's currently the Legal and Advocacy Director for Project South, based in Atlanta. Azadeh has worked for a number of years in the South advocating for immigrant communities. She previously served as the National Security and Immigrants' Rights Project Director with the ACLU of Georgia, is a past president of the National Lawyers Guild, and was one of the lead organizers of Atlanta's airport protest over the weekend. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
So I guess let's just start with this. Trump signed an executive order on immigration this past Friday, which is now being referred by many in the media as the Muslim ban. So we were just wondering if first you can kind of break down what this order actually means in practice, and if this is something we've seen in the U.S. before.
Well, so there are various parts to the executive order. One of them, you know, being talked about most often is a ban for basically individuals from seven Muslim countries, Muslim majority countries, including Iraq and Libya and the Sudan and four other countries. And so at first, when the announcement was made, it appeared as if it applied to green card holders as well. A lot of individuals who came to the U.S., let's say, I mean, we had examples here. There were 11 people who were detained at the Atlanta airport on Saturday, and from news reports, you know that at least four of them were green card holders who were Georgia residents. So they basically had gone, you know, on vacation abroad, and then they were now coming back to Georgia to their homes. And so all of a sudden, with a stroke of a pen, their green card was taken away. I mean, their, you know, their right to come back was taken away. So they were kind of, you know, stranded and then held at the airport until lawyers organized and went to the airport, and then two congressmen from here went to the airport to advocate for their release, as well as the national stay on the ban was granted. So that's, you know, that was the status of green card holders over the weekend until, I think, because of the national outrage, Sunday evening, the Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security came out with an announcement that green card holders should be allowed back in on a case-by-case basis. So that's what we know now about green card holders. But, you know, visa holders basically would continue to be banned from the country. And then there's also a ban on admission of new refugees.
And is this something that we've seen in the U.S. before? Has something like this happened? And people are referring a lot to the Chinese Exclusionary Act.
Right. Well, I think, I mean, the Chinese exclusion laws is a good example. And, you know, with the passage of the Immigration and the Nationality Act around, I believe, 1965, there were quotas established for each country. So we haven't really had a ban like this in effect. You know, I mean, even Bush, I mean, we're all very much aware of the crimes of the Bush regime. You know, even Bush was saying that, you know, we're not at war with Islam. So I think this is really unprecedented in recent history in terms of just, you know, the open and overt discrimination against Muslims that this ban represents.
Yeah, well, let's talk about that, because there are seven countries, you mentioned a few. It's Iran, Iraq, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, Syria, and Yemen. I was wondering if you could talk about, or if you know why these seven countries are specifically being targeted when there are lots of other Muslim countries as well. So what is it about these seven countries that the ban is referring to them?
Well, I think, you know, a lot of it has to do with politics. So, you know, relationships of the U.S. government with the governments at issue. So, you know, obviously Iran, for example, the U.S. government has not had a good relationship with the Iranian government for decades now. You know, there are other countries such as, for example, you know, Saudi or Egypt, where the U.S. government has a close partnership with. And, you know, I mean, both of those countries, I mean, both of those governments obviously are, you know, major human rights violators. I mean, you know, Sisi in Egypt has been committing, you know, gross and systematic violations of human rights in terms of, you know, cracking down on dissidents and imprisoning and torturing scores of people. And so you scarcely, if ever, you hear sort of criticism of that government, even during the Obama administration. And obviously, you know, we expect a close partnership to continue under Trump. This ban is very political, as well as I mentioned, being an attack on Muslims. And I think, you know, it's very much being perceived as it should be, as a Muslim ban.
Mm-hmm. Do you see any non-Muslim communities being having this impact them at all?
Being impacted?
Yeah.
There was another executive order that Trump signed on Wednesday. The executive order in relation to building the wall and then interior enforcement, so, you know, punishing sanctuary cities and bringing back secure communities and expanding the 287G program. So all of those measures that are meant to basically intensify collaboration between ICE and local police, you know, basically are driving fear, a sense of fear, into undocumented communities specifically. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, especially with closer police collaboration with ICE, that means that communities have to live their lives in fear.
When you refer to the undocumented and the documented people, is it safe to kind of say these are explicit human rights violations?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of, you know, religious discrimination, that's definitely, you know, human rights violation. And also, you know, in terms of some of the police abuses that we have seen, mm-hmm. against, you know, both Muslims and, you know, immigrants, you know, undocumented communities, those are also human rights violations. And so I know actually some people are now looking at potential violations of international treaties that the U.S. government has ratified. But, you know, of course, you know, in the era of Trump, we're going to see less and less respect, mm-hmm. for the international human rights mechanism as well.
Well, I think one of the more inspiring or even just interesting things is that we are seeing a lot of legal resistance to this executive order, and hopefully to many more of these executive orders he puts out.
Right.
So I guess today the state of Washington is now suing the Trump administration, and there are maybe 9 or 10 other sort of lawsuits that have been filed. I guess how much power do these people have in putting forth these lawsuits? Is that something we should be really hopeful about? Is it just buying time?
Yeah, I mean, definitely, I think any act of resistance, either, you know, through the courts or out on the street, helps. So, obviously, the national stay that was granted on Saturday night meant that people could go home. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, people who were being detained at the airport, and some of them actually, I read one person was actually put on the plane and about to be sent back to Syria when this court order came down. So, you know, definitely it helps. I think that, you know, the strategy obviously can't be just legal. You know, we can't rely on the courts, especially when, you know, Trump and co. are about to try to remake the judiciary. So, you know, people were out on the streets, at the airports, especially Saturday and Sunday, kind of, you know, spontaneous mobilizations. And, I mean, we saw here in Atlanta, the protest that was organized less than a day drew 6,000 plus people.
That's amazing.
It was just really inspiring to be a part of. And so I think, you know, that type of a mass mobilization with people out on the street is something that, you know, we need to continue to see that. And so, you know, obviously we should not be silent.
Now with this new administration, there are a lot more people coming out and mobilizing and organizing and speaking up and participating in protests that maybe never had really done that before.
Exactly.
And I was just wondering, for people listening, what are ways that they can keep the momentum up? Like, you know, if there's not going to be thousands of people protesting at the airport every day, but what are other ways that we can continue to be relevant and fight this, and also not just get overwhelmed, because like you said, this isn't just an attack on the Muslim community, it's attacks on like other immigrant communities, it's attacks on women's rights, just all sorts of human rights. So what are ways that people can first not get overwhelmed and then just keep keep staying connected?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, one thing I would say is join organizations. You know, if you're not already part of an organization, find a local organization that is working with, you know, immigrant communities, Black communities, Muslim communities, basically people under attack. You know, join those organizations, support them. We know that, you know, there are local grassroots organizations in every community that are really, you know, struggling, working with limited resources to defend the rights of the community. So make sure to seek them out, join them, support them. And then, you know, we obviously need a strong coalitions. So, for example, here in Atlanta, we formed a coalition. We call ourselves the January 20th Coalition because we had our first action on January 20th. So at noon, instead of the, you know, the inauguration that was happening in Washington, D.C., basically putting into place a regime of white supremacy, we in Atlanta had the people's inauguration. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, a coalition of grassroots groups came together, and we drafted a set of demands targeting the mayor and calling on him to declare Atlanta a sanctuary city. And so we presented the demands to the deputy of the mayor. And so actually his deadline is tomorrow to get back to us, and we still haven't heard back from him. So we will be tweeting at him all day tomorrow, asking when is he going to declare Atlanta a sanctuary city. So I think that also, you know, points to another sort of strategy. Obviously, you know, we're all attention is focused on the federal level and all the reactionary policies coming out of this administration, but I think we need to take the fight to the local level.
Mm-hmm.
That's where, you know, we can have the most impact in terms of pushing to put into place progressive policies.
Yeah, I think that's really awesome that you're pushing for Atlanta as a sanctuary city. I guess, are there resources for people to kind of learn, again, because we are seeing people start to mobilize who have never really been a part of the organizing movement before. Like, how would people even start looking into, you know, asking for their college campus to be, you know, a sanctuary campus, or their city to be a sanctuary city? Like, where do people start with something like that?
Mm-hmm. So NDLON, the National Day Labor Organizing Network, has put out resources on basically making your campus a sanctuary campus. I would also say that, you know, for general sort of organizing training, my organization, Project South, we are based in Atlanta, and we provide support to social justice movements in the Southeast. So, you know, we're always happy to help. We have, you know, organizing trainings, actually one coming up, I believe, February 18th and 19th in our office. So people are, you know, welcome to check that out. And then, you know, we have resources on our website. We do a workshop called Build a Movement, so just, you know, the basics of movement building. And then another tactic that we use at Project South in collaboration with, you know, other grassroots organizations in the Southeast is the People's Movement Assembly, where people come together for a day or two at a community space to basically, take a stock of the state of the movement and then strategize about the next steps. And so we have a handbook, the PMA handbook, that we can also provide in case people are interested in holding their own People's Movement Assembly in their community.
That's amazing. Thank you for sharing all those resources. I guess this is like a more personal question, but you've done so much and you continue to do so much. How have you been feeling with this? Because you are somebody that's been organizing in these communities well before the Trump administration. So does this feel like something new to you or something more urgent? Or is this kind of what you've always been aware of as an organizer in these communities?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, even during the Obama administration, you know, we saw a lot of repression. You know, we saw the expansion of the immigration detention industry. We saw the deportation machine, you know, going as strong. We saw, you know, a lot of attacks on Muslims and, you know, efforts to, for example, stop mosque expansions or building of any mosques. You know, on the state level, Georgia has always been at the forefront of introducing anti-immigrant legislation. And so, you know, we've been fighting this fight for many years, but this does, you know, this new level of repression just seems really like something we haven't seen, you know, in recent history. And it's, you know, as I said, it's very overt and, you know, out in the open, kind of the level of hate, you know, for our communities. And I think we just need to intensify our tactics, and you know, it needs to be very clear as well that our movements need to be led by people who are directly impacted. So I think, you know, for the longest time, a lot of maybe, you know, well-resourced organizations that are not being led by directly impacted people are kind of, you know, trying to assume leadership positions, and you know, right now that just, you know, is not okay. Those organizations or people can provide resources, but the movement needs to be led by people of color and directly impacted people.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And I think that's the thing that people tend to forget the quickest when they just want to mobilize to center the voices of the most oppressed.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess, is there any, we're running out of time, but were there any sort of last things that you wanted to touch on that we didn't talk about, or just anything that you'd want to share with listeners that are interested in this and in general interested in like any sort of resistance that has to do with our current administration?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I think we should just make sure not to stay silent. You know, I think what happened Friday night was that he signed these executive orders, and you know, he and the people around him probably thought, you know, okay, well, this is just the first step. We're going to sign this. You know, who cares about this? You know, the Muslim people from, you know, these specific countries. You know, it's going to be okay. I really don't think that they expected the level of resistance that just built up immediately over the weekend. I mean, starting with the action at the JFK and kind of spreading all over the country, and lawyers mobilizing quickly, and all the legal actions that were filed, you know, they weren't expecting this. And so, you know, I think we just have to keep building, you know, keep mobilizing, keep saying no, you know, keep resisting at every level, at every, you know, move, at every sort of, you know, reactionary policy that they're trying to push. You know, we have to be there. Otherwise, they're just going to, you know, take it further. So, you know, this was the first move. Okay, well, what's the next step going to be? Revoking the citizenship of all people who are not of European descent?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, we saw one of his advisors a few days after the election speaking approvingly of the internment of Japanese Americans. I mean, that's the first time I have heard in my lifetime somebody referring to that atrocious act in an approving manner, and I think that's where things could be headed, you know, unless we, you know, stand up strongly and say no. So that's, you know, hopefully people will continue to come out, and I really, you know, felt a level of pride at the people in Atlanta in particular, you know, for just mobilizing and coming out and lending support to affected communities. And for resources, you know, at least for folks in the Southeast, I would refer people to our website, projectsouth.org, if you're interested in kind of keeping up with our work, you know, resources that we provide. Feel free to follow us on social media, and I, you know, I hope to stay in touch with folks organizing.
Thank you so much for your time today, and we'll be in touch soon.